officer from the department. I thought 5 minutes is enough to allow the minister to come in. It's already 5 past 10. How far is she?
She's in the office.
She's in the office.
From the Northwest province.
My name is Miriam Shuli from the Free State province.
My name is Tao from Nepal.
to the department.
Good morning, Honorable Chair, Paddy Pediatri, Acting DG, Basic Education.
My name is Ryan Jogan, the Administrator in the Department of Education, from JB.
My name is Matan Jumamori, Acting DBT for Curriculum DB.
Can we please? Quick. If you don't introduce yourself quick, I'm going to ask you to excuse yourself from this meeting. Let's make it quick.
Kiara from the Times newspaper, so wait.
Sure.
My name is Dinan Ngobeni from the Minister of Basic Education.
Second, Valerie, senior teacher.
Good morning.
Honorable Moroto is attending Joint Committee on Intelligence. Honorable Zulu as well. Honorable Mbebe is attending the Steering Committee on Taking Parliament, but she will be joining us later.
Honorable Minister?
The Deputy Minister is attending the Joint Committee in Parliament, and the administrator from Limpopo is coming on his way, so we had to do exactly what you wanted us to get to the point and cut out some slides, so he's doing the cutting so he can come in. So he's here.
Yes, yeah. Thank you, Honorable Minister. Let's just go straight to the presentation. Honorable members and Minister, I must just indicate that we received the presentation very late, which is for the first time that we get that from the department. I think in future that should be, you know, addressed, because normally we have an opportunity to get our presentation earlier, but yesterday around 5 that we got the presentation, and it doesn't allow members to get enough time to present to prepare. But I know that members are ready, but I'm stating this, that in future can we just speak to how we have been operating with this department. Thank you.
My most sincere apology. Indicate, we definitely make sure, DG, that we don't have a repeat of the situation. What we want to change is that the respective administrators will quickly just take us through the presentation. So we will not present, but we gave you all the details in this presentation, so we won't go into the details, because our assumption that you should draw. You have the full presentation. So what we have here is really the point of where we are, without going into the history. We ask that the first presentation gives you the history, which we assume you have. So we go straight into where we are, so that we have time to engage. So that's what the two administrators will do. So we start with the Eastern Cape. So just go straight to where we are. What is the progress? What are the challenges? The same thing with Limpopo, where we are, what are the challenges, without going to the background. So you can ignore the first one, you can keep it for a record, because it gives you all the stories, whereas this one just goes to the point.
Which one?
The new one just goes into where we are.
Yeah, thank you, Minister, because I was a little bit worried when I saw the presentation, because as the SLEC committee, we want to know what is the progress, where are we currently. But the presentation, when one looks, it just gave a background, it really didn't assist, but it also disempowers the members, because now it will be the first time that they get this presentation, and you know. But honorable members, let's try to listen and follow on the presentation and then interact with the presentation.
Can we just ask the department if they do have a hard copy on that new presentation? Coming. Thank you very much.
Can I correct something? The new one is a summary of it. So what you got is more than what you are going to give. Because what you have gives you the background. And I said to the officials, they must cut and just go straight to half on this. So what you have in any case. So that nothing you are going to say which is not in the document, but you are going to say less than what is in the document.
And we want more.
Oh, I see.
No, but more will come when we interact.
Oh,
I see. Over to the department.
Thank you, Honourable Minister, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. On behalf of DDE, representing the department in the Eastern Cape, I just want to hone in on the key areas that were the reasons why DDE was in the Eastern Cape, and I want to report progress on those areas in particular. The first one, Chair, is the audit report and the audit outcomes, which has been a big problem that has eluded the Eastern Cape Department of Education since 1994. And since the intervention, we've seen a huge progress. The outcome was very promising. The Eastern Cape Department of Education has improved from a disclaimer to a qualified audit opinion. And our special focus has been on three specific areas. The audit rectification strategy, the strengthening of the internal control function, as well as internal controls, and I think those are the areas that paid off remarkably well for us. Number two, the post-basket in this case has been a problem that has led to conflicts between the department and the union, you know, the department and social partners around the issue of you know, the number of posts to be cleared, but also issues of contestation of the process, and lastly, the whole basket process has been contested by unions in this case. In the last two financial years, we've seen a huge progress, including progress that we are now managing for 2014-2015 post-basket. To a large extent, the incentive declared its post-basket in time, and it was within budget, although there were one or two issues that Treasury was concerned with. But just to say that the big issue in the Eastern Cape post-basket is learner numbers that are almost declining, average 1.2-1.5% over the last 3 years. That has been the big issue. Delivery of stationary textbooks in the Eastern Cape is an area that has caused a lot of havoc, and falling, you know, outside norms in terms of delivery time, delivery packages, as well as the right levels at the right time to the right learners in this case has been a problem. Since last year, there's been a huge improvement in the delivery of LTI which is the fourth area, has also been a problem, and in particular, projects that could not be finished, budgets that could not be spent, budgets that had to be returned to Treasury, and with the support of National Treasury, DPE, and Provincial Treasury, the Eastern Cape, you know, has succeeded in turning around the corner. By the end of the financial year, the budget was at 38%. Treasury has put in a new service delivery model for almost all infrastructure units in South Africa, but Eastern Cape benefited tremendously from that, because with the setting up of that unit, there were almost a number of posts that were guaranteed through funding from National Treasury that has resulted in Eastern Cape getting the technical requisite expertise in the planning and delivery of infrastructure. And 90% of the critical posts have been filled as we speak. Budget stabilization has been a key pillar of the turnaround, and as you know, that Eastern Cape budget, you know, has shot over budget by 2 billion in 2010, leading to a huge outcry about the capacity of the department to manage its finances. And since we came in there, we're focused on budget stabilization, putting in place processes, procedures and structures that will allow us, you know, to get a control over the budget. And by the end of this financial year, at least their budget was under by 2%, which was remarkably well, you know. We are not saying the problem is over. There are still huge, you know, a number of problems in terms of managing it. But we have moved from a 2 billion over expenditure to almost 2% under expenditure. I'm not sure if there's any threshold of under expenditure in budgets, but 2% was almost a commendable achievement. Payment of teachers, it's been making national news because it's been given several teachers that were terminated end of the academic year in 2010, resulting in reappointment of those teachers in 2011. Between 2011 and 2012, there was a huge outcry about non-payment of these teachers, and we recorded 5,185 of these cases, and 4,347 of these cases were submitted to Treasury by end of July. As I'm speaking, according to the latest update, that only 29 cases that were left, which is also a commendable achievement. Just briefly on the ANA results, as you know, members, that Eastern Cape both in ANA and the matric results has made huge progress. And if you look at, you know, home language and mathematics, we've recorded an impressive improvement. Grade 3, grade 6 is still a problem. If you look at grade 6, both math and home language, we still have glitches that we need to attend to. And right now, the Eastern Cape is putting together a math-based language strategy as well as language in primary schools teaching strategy to deal with these critical problems. Harald's performance, the baseline of almost 400 and the standard of 400 has put on this specific subject that have declared to the Eastern Cape and their performance. It's because home language in the Eastern Cape has been an area of focus, and we've looked at the performance of Isikosa as a home language in Eastern Cape, which has almost not done badly if you look at the performance. The provincial science performance, which has also almost improved, but math and science is still the biggest problem of Eastern Cape. But if you compare 2011 and 2012 team, which is science and math, you will see that 2011, they were almost better compared to 2012, but it's an area that the province is giving attention to. Key critical subjects, or what we call gateway subjects, that the performance of Eastern Cape between the two academic years, 2011-2012, an improvement in accounting, but I'm not going to go through all of them, Honorable Chair, but the big one, you know, that will almost determine whether children pass or not, is your English first additional language, which is the majority of children that are in there, and there's an improvement from 92% to 95%. You look at life sciences, and although there's a slight drop, but they've stabilized around 63-64%. Mathematical literacy has gone down by almost 1%, but they've stabilized around 78%. Mathematics, which is the biggest Achilles heel of the province, is an area that, you know, we can note a slight improvement from 33
with the province now.
So the minister and the MSC together with the office of the premier have been initiating discussion around the sustainability and turnaround strategy. We will take questions.
Thank you.
Can we have
good morning, Honorable Minister, Honorable Chair, and Honorable Members. I'll follow suit at what my colleague has begun to do. Just to give highlights of the successes in the implementation of the Section 101 Bill in the report. I think the first one that we need to start with is the one that made the news around 2012. Procurement and delivery of textbooks. I think it's important that we contextualize this challenge, basically. Honorable Chair, Honorable Minister and Members, you recall that education provisioning in schools is basically, or in the main, based on learner numbers. What we find with the procurement and delivery of textbooks peculiar is made or exacerbated by the following. We use the MS database, the data sets, for the construction of classrooms, for instance, as a simple one. Despite the condition of the classrooms in the main, because there's a historic type of a challenge that relates to that one, we don't appear to have a major classroom shortage in the province. And what we use is the MS database. The provision of water and sanitation is a rights issue. Is based again on the MS database. The procurement of stationery, which we've never had a problem about, is also based on the data set that we find in MS. The rollout of the school nutrition program, or the determination of Northeast schools, is based on the MS database. Teacher provisioning is based on learner numbers, and we've never had problems about those challenges. And also, more importantly, Chair, the transfers to schools for the per capita expenditure is based on learner numbers. And we've never had a single complaint about the insufficiency of the transfers to schools. But when it comes to the procurement of textbooks, when we use the same database, there seems to be problems. And it's a matter that we are trying to study in the province as to understand as to where it derives from, where it originates from, what actually anchors it, what is it that justifies that type of an argument. But it's a matter that unfortunately we can't let go because it keeps on hitting the news, and that's the one that appears to make us extremely vulnerable in the province. But I can report confidently that arising from these challenges, we then put together a strategy for the procurement and delivery of textbooks, very cost-effective type of a system. Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, some of you will know, you've come to the province, for instance, with the Joint Select Committees. In Limpopo, we have a very interesting type of an arrangement in the procurement process. We negotiate prices even further than the prices of the catalogue. Because of the austerity measures that we have and the scarcity of resources, we actually have been fortunate that the publishers have been playing ball with us on this one, that the level of reduction of the prices has enabled us to procure for 2012. You recall we used the 2013 budget to procure for 2012. We procured for 2013. We're in the process of procuring for 2014. We're even comfortable that the coverage even at that level will be adequate. So that strategy is based on that. That's why we call it cost-effective. And the province wants to continue with that type of a trajectory. You recall again, Honorable Member, that the other major problem, in fact the major problem in Limpopo that caused us to plunge to the level that we are at, was because of the financial and cost and cash flow management challenges. We have managed to stabilize the budget process. We are actually chuffed to be told by National Treasury that the budget processes have been stabilized, and the submissions and interactions were very credible, which appears, as they were saying, to have been the first in a very long time in the province. We are also trying to restructure the branch of the CFO. Honorable Members, Honorable Chair, you recall the generic structures that have been proposed by the Office of the Accountant General, and would want to customize those structures to fit the bill in the province, so that we don't just make it unnecessarily bloated and make it a bit difficult to control. Again, related to that one, Chair, there was the problem of the compensation of employees. It's a similar problem that the Eastern Cape found itself in, that the compensation of employees was very bloated. The situation is like this. You recall the norm is supposed to be 80-20. 80 of the compensation in an ideal situation and 20% for goods and services. In Limpopo, you find the situation that that split is 87 to 13. 87 of compensation and 13% of goods and services. When you translate that into rand and cents, Chair, the budget is 23 billion. That translates to more than 18 billion of the budget. Now, the remaining amount of money would include conditional grant allocations. If you remove the conditional grant allocation, you're just left with about 1.5 billion to deal with the core business of education in the province, which makes it very difficult. And it became a deliberate type of a strategy that we zoom into that one, that we look into the compensation of employees' budget. Honorable members, some of you may recall that the provincial expo had taken a decision that the COE budget must be cut by 2% per annum. We pleaded with them that, look, we don't want to deal with numbers because education service delivery is a human resource type of an intensive program. When you speak percentages, you speak people. When somebody says cut 2%, we don't know how you cut the 2% without doing an intensive type of an investigation around that one. Chair, you'll recall that the preference of the department was that we need to stabilize the system rather than looking or playing the numbers game. We were able at the end of the financial year to save 327 million. It's gratifying to inform the committee that the entire province on compensation saved 329 million. Of that amount, 327 was a contribution from the Department of Education. So it was more than 97% of the total savings on the COE budget came from the Department of Education. And we're very comfortable about that. Of course, we can't stop there. We've got to find a way to reverse the trend where money was taken from goods and services to augment the compensation budget. That's the strategy that we're trying to do, so that we reverse that trend and take the money back to where it actually belonged in the first instance. Chair, it's also important to note that when we came to the province, members will recall, and we stated this severally, that the transfers to schools at the time we came in was at 62% of the national norm. And I want to stress this point, because this is very important. It doesn't get reported properly. When we deal with the norms and standards, transfers to schools, we're dealing with two important elements. One is the procurement and delivery of LTSMs, which is the crucial part, and the second one is what we club together as non-LTSM transfers to schools. Those will relate to maintenance and all these things that the schools are supposed to do. Now, the amount of money that I'm talking about, because we're doing central procurement of LTSMs, excludes LTSM. It's basically the transfer that ought to be going to the school, basically. When we got there, that level was sitting at 62% of the national norm. I'm talking across the quintiles. We've managed to improve that to 76% this year. And again, the central procurement of the LTSM is still happening in the province. So that excludes the huge sum of money that we are supposed to deal with the procurement of textbooks. And we're very confident that next year we'll completely, even the norm that relates to the transfers to school will be fully funded come next year. But it doesn't mean that the other imperatives that relate to the work that has to be done in the schools is actually disadvantaged, because we do maintenance of the schools. So a portion of that we're actually assisting. The other problem that the province is faced with is the high bill of services, municipality services to schools. We actually assist them with those ones, because we've got state-of-the-art schools. In some situations, the security imperatives of the schools, we pay for that. So the school is not left to its vices because of the shortage in the transfer of the notes. So I needed to emphasize that point so that it's clearly understood that the province is not as disadvantaged as it would be when this thing is not contextualized when it's reported that way. The other most important point was us making a determination that the learner numbers or the databases information databases in the province were extremely unreliable. The information was not replicable, and in most cases, you know, part of the problems emanated because of that unreliability of the data set that we have in the province. So we took a conscious decision that we can't have the MS running on its own, and when there are other information systems in the department that can supplement that. So we did a serious integration and customization of the MS database with the SASEMS. SASEMS is the South African Schools Administration Management System, and the LORITS, Learner Number Unit Records and Information Tracking System. We've integrated all of those. But what we've also done is to integrate the Acting DG, the business intelligence, so that when we extract this information, it's information when we can properly report or you know, yes, report about. So we've also done, we've appointed about 134 SASEMS coordinators in the 134 circuits on contract for them to assist with the mining of that information. The other problem within public service, of course, was the structure of the department. We had to engage in a very systematic type of an exercise assisted by the Department of Public Services and Administration to use the organizational development principles. They conducted an organizational functionality assessment, and we are fusing that with the service delivery model of the department so that we have this mean and lean structure, which is not top-heavy. We want to move everybody that relates to curriculum support to the area or the places where they ought to be, rather than keep them at the head office because there's a cost element that relates. Otherwise, you've got to replicate that function as to go to the districts as well as the service, as the second. That's what we did dealing with that one. Another one that also relates to database, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, is PESAL. We had to engage in a deliberate PESAL cleanup. You recall in Waterberg, towards the end of, it was early this year, there was a report that we were paying ghost educators. The PESAL cleanup was intended to actually verify and deal with that matter decisively before the AG could come in and actually pronounce on it. The PESAL cleanup yielded more than 8,000 unfunded posts, which we had to abolish immediately. The exercise the HR branch is doing is we want to know whether, other than the people we know in Waterbed, whether there's no possibility that we could have paid somebody on those unfunded posts. And it's a matter that we're taking seriously, and it's a matter that will follow the people that actually transgressed on it. What is beautiful about PESAL is that when you log onto it, it knows who logged in. So we can follow the actual person that dealt with the PESAL system itself. We also, with the assistance of the Provincial Treasury and National Treasury, appointed Stats SA for them to conduct a physical headcount of both educators and learners in the province. We constructed a template that included even them giving us or doing a condition assessment of the schools themselves. We just received this week, Honorable Chair, the preliminary report. And the Statistician General is proposing a workshop at which we'll sit down, tease out these things, so that that report means something to us, and not just a statistical report that cannot be used for management purposes. So we're going to be coordinating that that workshop with the Statistician General's department so that we deal with that matter. But what is important about that one is what the report also seems to be confirming. One, you remember Census 2011 suggested that there was a trend of, in fact, an exodus of people out of the province. The report seems to be confirming that. And it seems to be confirming what we're finding in our annual school survey. It confirms what we find in the SNAP survey of 2013, that the numbers, as is the case with the Eastern Cape, appear to be dwindling. The issue that we need to find is to what extent is that decrease in the learner numbers, so that there's focused type of service delivery to the point at which the service delivery is required. So that's the reason that we're going to be convening that workshop. The other important point, again, Chair, we're assisted ably here by the DBE for us to deal, one of the strategies that assisted us to deal with the compensation of employees' budget, similar to the Eastern Cape, with a huge number of temporary educators who were occupying substantive posts. There's another category of educators, they are called ad hoc. Something ad hoc for me is temporary. I don't know what the classification becomes, but the, in Libor, but there's temporary educators and substantive posts, there's also ad hoc educators. And the issue seems to be classifying them in different ways, yet the words mean one and the same thing. Now, in the case of the province, what we strategically did, assisted by the consultation that the DBE led, we entered into an agreement. It was a provincial ELRC collective agreement that will absorb permanently all the temporary educators and substantive posts so that we deal with that phenomenon completely. There were more than 2,500 when it started, which were costing the fiscus about 750 million. And we needed to deal with that area. The ad hoc educator, we had about 1,500 of them, which again were costing the fiscus about 450 million. And remember, this issue about ad hoc will arise when, for instance, a school has introduced a teacher through attrition and moved out of the system, and we need an interim arrangement, so you're bringing the ad hoc educator. Or a woman teacher is on apportionment leave, we'll bring in the ad hoc educator in that case. So it's a temporary type of an arrangement, in some cases that is unavoidable. If somebody is on sick leave, you've got to bring in somebody so that the learners don't feel the brunt of the absence of that teacher. So but it's a matter that we're actually stringently managing, so that it's not a laissez-faire type of a thing, that because in the previous year we had more than 1,000, the following year we must have that 1,000. It has to be a matter that is determined by need, and that's what we are doing in the province. So that's how we managed to get the 327 million savings. The other thing that we have done, we had a lot of a high vacancy rate in strategic posts, particularly in promotional posts. Lots of schools had been at principals and everybody was acting. And that's where this substitute educator thing comes in. Because when you appoint, let's say there's a deputy principal at the school, you appoint that person as a principal. The HOD becomes the deputy principal. The post-level one educator acts as the HOD. Then you've got to get somebody to fill in that gap that has been created there. So in this case, what we wanted to do was to deal with the top management layer and flush these ad hoc or temporary educators out of the system, where the profile of the educator would have not met the profile of the post. Of course, what we're not gambling with in critical posts like physical science and mathematics, if there was such a person, we appointed that person immediately, because there's a shortage of that type of a skill in the province. So the math and science and English educators, that one is dealt with almost immediately. And that's how we're dealing with that matter. But we've managed to fill these principals' posts, deputy principals, HOD, and of course, we had about 30 second manager posts that were vacant. So we needed to stabilize that delivery model at that level. We've been ably assisted, Chair, by a technical team that has been appointed by Treasury to deal with all functions that relate to the PFMA. And that's where the province was actually bleeding, on financial management, supply chain management, asset management, and all these things. If you read the AG's report, that's where the problems would arise, in those areas. So we've got a team of technical experts that are assisting us in that area to stabilize the system. We've got policy documents that have been produced. We are trying to stabilize. We had the workshop yesterday, for instance, to deal pointedly with the AG findings in the province. What we found out, again, just to digress a bit, with the AG report, the opinion has not changed. It's still a disclaimer. But what we were told and what the minister was told is that the issues that the AG was dealing with to disclaim the department were historic. It's not matters that arise now. The system has stabilized now. The input has improved. The submissions as requested is actually improving. The problems that we've got to deal with, those historic problems that were there. So we're beginning to deal with those root causes and try to obliterate them. One of the strategies there, Chair, relates to this asset register. We did not have an asset register in the province, whether movable or immovable. We just did not have it. We had to create that type of an asset register from scratch. And unfortunately, we're using the Excel spreadsheet, which is not very reliable. And we have taken a decision last week that we buy an electronic system called BOT to deal with asset registers in that, so that it's stabilized. But Treasury has taken a decision to reintroduce LOGIS in the department. The beauty about LOGIS is that it can be integrated with PAS. So So we're looking at that. But the completed immovable assets, we're transferring those to the Department of Public Works, the rightful owners of a state property in the department, I mean in the province. We're moving, that's in terms of Guillaume. We're moving those immovable properties to them. But we can't just hand over without a credible register. So we created a register rather than Section 42 of the PFMA would say, for instance, we just need to have an inventory. So we did something more than that. So create a register because it wasn't there, so that we are confident about what we're handing over to the Department of Public Works. One of the important points, which also is in line with the Eastern Cape one related to land and transport. In 2012-13, we had 20,700 learners that were benefiting. We have increased to 26,540. That's the level that they are traveling in those number of routes that you find in the province. Minister, what we presented to Treasury as a pressure point is this. If, say, for instance, the learner numbers in terms of the declaration of no fee schools were to increase beyond the level at which we are providing, we needed to quantify that in runs and cents so that we can see the extent of the challenge. And we presented that challenge to Treasury as a potential budget pressure point, that it's a matter that needs to be looked into. Because if no fee schools have got to be supported in the manner as declared, we've got to be able to be ready to do that. So we've raised that matter as a pressure point. Last week, honorable members, you might have seen in the media, there was an article, I think it was page 4 of the Star, about the MEC's intention to merge schools. Mm. And this thing was misrepresented. The MEC is closing schools. We're merging schools. It's an imperative that we merge schools. When a school is excessively small, to the extent that you find 20 learners and 8 educators, that doesn't make any economic sense. It doesn't make any educational sense. In some situations, you would find 3 primary schools in the same type of locality. And those primary schools have seriously dwindled numbers. And people want to retain them because one of them is named after a chief or a mother of a chief or part of the lineage, that type of a thing. And these things don't make any economic or educational sense. That's what we're trying to deal with. If the honorable members read the guidelines on infrastructure, the basic functionality on infrastructure, there are numbers that are stated there on what constitutes a small school. Obviously, when the learner numbers are less than 100, and yet we have this huge number of educators that are there, it doesn't serve the purpose. Because there's lots of leakage that we're experiencing there. So that's what we're trying to do. It's a matter that MEC is very determined that she's going to do. But we still have to do the statutory consultation processes, which unfortunately we cannot avoid. Honorable Chair, honorable members, we've seen an improvement in the ANA assessments between the 2 years. And you recall we just instituted this in grade 9 last year, so we can't compare what we did or how we did in 2011 because we did not have that. But as you can see, with the languages, we seem to be doing fine. Except for mathematics in grade 6, there's supposed to be a 2% decline there. The performance in grade 9 is very worrisome. And there are strategies that the curriculum branch has put together, which Minister has applauded, as to how we're going to deal with that type of a challenge there. Because it's the last grade of the senior phase, and they're going to the FET band to get into specialization. If we don't improve or get that grounding properly done there, we're going to have problems in the later grades in the system. The next slide, Chair, again relates to the gateway subjects that my colleague has mentioned. And of course, you'll see, which is something that we gloat about in the province. We seem to be the province of science and mathematics excellence. And we've been constantly doing good in that area. That's what the slide there would be showing. If you look at the next slide, Chair, we have shown a huge improvement in the province. In 2009, we started at 48.9% pass rate, which improved at the end of the 2012 school calendar year at 66.9. We were worried about that because we had set a target at 70%. We didn't want to be below 70%. Of course, through the supplementary examination, we managed that. We had the highest pass rate in supplementary exams in the country by 2.9%, which improved our pass rate for the 2012/13 with the supplementary to 70.8, which made us feel a bit better because at least we had attained the target that we wanted to attain. There's an important point to make here, Chair. You'll recall when we were challenged with the delivery of textbooks, media was saying there's no teaching and learning in the province. These numbers dispute that. The improvement in ANA, which is the lower grades of your schooling system, and the substantial improvement we got in grade 12, it is literally demystified that type of a situation. We've struggled, as the minister has done so severally, that education in the province was not stifled or disadvantaged to the extent as well as reported. And people didn't believe that. I think this is a good story to tell about the province, because the province was completely doomed when it came to that area. That because there were no books, teachers would have not been resourceful to use other means to teach. And that's exactly what happened in the province. I think there are two more slides, Chair, that I would need to touch, and then I'll let go. As the issue for us was not only related to numbers, it also related to quality. In the grade 12 examinations, we had 15,324 of the candidates who passed with bachelor passes. And that was the highest in the country. I'm stating this so that this thing is clear, that when the media reports about it, it's clear as to the extent of performance of the grade 12 class of this, the schooling system in the province. What is even more important about that one, the top performer in the country came from a Quintal 3 school in the province, because a girl child who was the top performer in the country came from that province. Some of the top performers in mathematics, in fact the majority of them, came from the province, for maths and science. That's the quality that we're talking about. They came from the province. What is also important to tell, which is a matter that we normally do not do, Minister and DG, we did some comparison as to where does the top performer in the independent schooling system come in when you compare them with the top performers in the public schooling system. And then, as fate would have it, the top performer last year was the 27th compared to the top performers in the public schooling system. And that immediately demystified this notion that independent schooling appears to be doing better than the public schooling system. So there's a phenomenon in the province that we'd want to follow. Was that luck or fate, or was it because we were struggling last year that the public schools performed even better, to the extent that the top performer in independent schools will be the 27th among the top performers of the province? It's a matter that we'll follow after. And we're very optimistic, Chair and Honourable Member, that with the full implementation of TEPS next year, the province may do, let me say, will show some improvement. I should not say may, because that's very optimistic. The last slide, Chair, that I need to share with yourselves, it's an important slide, because this is part of the things that relate to poverty alleviation that the members need to know about. In Limpopo, the basis for our planning is 3,947 schools. Now, 97% of those schools are in quintile 1, 2, and 3. 97%. Only 3% are in quintile 4 and 5. So in other words, schooling system in Limpopo is provided through the poorest of the poor in the middle. 96% of the learners in the province are in those schools. So I don't think it makes anybody to be doubtful to say it appears that education provisioning in the province is almost free, because we're paying for that type of aid delivery. Now, the 96% of the learner population in the province constitute 1.6 million learners in the province. Remember, the school nutrition program is an obligatory program for the quintiles 1, 2, and 3. So all 1.6 million learners are participating in that program, which then suggests that a child at least has a credible meal, that the nutritious meal that they will get per day. And of course, you know that program creates economic activity within the province. And this is a matter that we actually need to highlight. It's an important game that we're actually making. and would need to strengthen that program. That's the reason, Minister, we made the submission. If the numbers for scholar transport were to increase substantially to this extent, what is it the pressure that would be? Because we're dealing with the poorest of the poor in the province in our public education system. And the conditions or the economic condition seem to be getting worse. And if that's the case, we've got to be preparing the system to actually deal with that shock if it were to arise. Can I pause there? I apologize, Chairperson, to take this. Sorry, there's one important point that we need to make for the members to note. What is it that we made that made us do better in Limpopo? That made the Eastern Cape struggle? Because they are here with that. At least they're out of the mood. We learned the lessons in the Eastern Cape about what is it that could make Section 101 be succeed. One of which, the cluster of departments in Limpopo that were put under administration in terms of Section 101B, which included Treasury, assisted a great deal. The view that we're having, if Section 101B does not enable the national executive to take control of the accounting officer's responsibilities, it would make it difficult to implement to the extent that we've implemented in the province. I know there's a draft legislation that DPSA is drafting, and it's a matter that needs to come out quite strongly, that if the national executive intends, and of course the conditions will prevail, to deal with Section 101B imperatives, the view in Limpopo, Minister, that we're putting across in the sustainability strategy that we're having, that matter should be looked into.
Yeah, you are coordinating both interventions. Now you're presenting one for the board, not as the national coordinator.
Thank you. Thank you for the two presentations. And maybe I should just indicate that where I'm seated, we welcome the presentation. But from both presentations, you know, you see this, the positive, and one wonders, are there no current challenges that we're still facing? But I think that will be addressed when we interact with the two presentations. Honourable members, is the opportunity for members to interact with both presentations. Before that,
allow me to add, I think there are also two points that colleagues have left out, especially in the Eastern Cape, also on the positive note, which was celebrating that I had a meeting with the NGO who said to me, had it not been of old unresolved problems, this year in the Eastern Cape we would have received an unqualified report. So this year's report on its own outside outstanding matters was clean, which I thought was quite encouraging for us to have reached that stage in the Eastern Cape. So moving from disclaimer, it was a big effort, but also what the figures don't even tell, Chair, when we're looking at quality, Eastern Cape is leading nationally in terms of ECD access. And it shows from your annual results in the foundation phase. Despite the fact that they're not top in the national certificate, but they compete quite well because of the success that they're achieving. And the last point also, I think, on the positive check, because I think having with all the difficulties, that's why I was celebrating the positives. I think you're right to pick up the others. What I think Memphis is not raising also about Limpopo. As a department, we also did an audit of which province delivers the best services for the poorest. And we have what we call the Limpopo surprise. That Limpopo, of the top 500, I don't know how many schools we took, 500. The majority of those schools are in Limpopo, where you get the best quality education for children from the poorest. So it's not an accident that you have the top learner from Limpopo, but it is a province which strangely stands out in terms of the best services for the poorest of the poor. We also did a MET review, which the president had requested us to do in the State of the Nation address. And it was done by independent professors from universities. who reveal that the best maths program that we have in the country is in Limpopo, as compared to all other provinces. And that was something also to celebrate check. And I think the next time I'm really requesting, I don't want to take your time, that we would really appreciate an opportunity to come and brief you about the education collaboration framework that we have put in place. The majority of the districts that were put in the 20 districts are in both Limpopo and the Eastern Cape, simply because we are working there. And we, as I said, I don't want to take your time, we think it will be one of the best things that will happen to this country if we get this right. We profiled Vembe, for instance, in Vembe, and picked up every single problem that is there. Whether it's a shattered of glass, broken window, bad teaching in the classroom, and say this is a basket of all the problems. Mm-hmm. And work with the district, the province, and nation, and to put a team to say, the troubleshooting team, go and resolve this. And we are furiously sending desks to provinces that we are profiling. But as I said, I don't want to take time, but we've involved the majority of districts in Limpopo and the Eastern Cape to make sure that we finally, by the time we leave there, that it's sustainable, we clear off everything else that we can do with them. We've mobilized national departments, correctional service, water affairs, labor, to really make sure that by the time we leave, at least we even clean up things that we're not going to intervene. We're not intervening for desks and chairs and other things and toilets, but we thought that by the time we leave, we want to leave them with a legacy of a really solid plan, and that's what other thing we're doing as part of just sustainability, because we're really gearing ourselves to live in both provinces, because we think it has stabilized, but we really want to really put in systems which will leave a longer legacy.
Thank you. Honourable Minister, Honourable Members, should I start like this? From you, Honourable Ransom.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Minister. And I let me commend the presentations that we got today. You know, when you listen, you sometimes don't have questions and say, this looks all perfect, but it depends what we get on the ground. And I'm sure maybe we'll get what is presented here. Chairperson, my first question is on the Eastern Cape presentation on LTFM. I've seen the presentation saying that 100% of LTFM is being delivered for 2013, that was on the slide. Do you have a program that is as perfect as 2013 for 2014, because now it's going towards the end of the year? And on the issue of those LTFMs that were not delivered the previous years, what is the department doing on the failure of delivering the LTFM in the province? Because if there is nothing that is being done, I feel that it's going to happen again. There will be that challenge again that will come your way. And also, Chairperson, the status of the two provinces in respect to delivering quality education. I know the issue of unions being part of curbing or part of disturbing the education within the will come up. But what is the department doing, or what is the status of these two provinces in the respect to delivering quality education and improving performance? Because the people on the ground, they are not looking only at the teachers. They would also look at the department. What is the department, what are the departments of the two provinces doing to improve the quality of education in their provinces? And also in the Eastern Cape, the Honorable Minister, there are schools that have been built, those mud schools that were removed and the other schools that have been built. Can we be given a proper, what can I say, a proper report on how many schools have been built? Because I think there were 300 or 400 and something schools that were supposed to be built. How many have been built now? How many of those schools are being occupied? The other schools that we have visited at the beginning of the year, they were already delivered to the principals and the SGP, but those schools did not have the material. Children were still sitting on their crates things that they usually use. Are those, as the minister saying, he has delivered a desk which was not part of the intervention? Did all those schools get those desks, or is there a backlog on those deliveries? Thanks, Chair.
Thank you.
I will come back.
Thanks, Chairperson. May I also add my voice in commending the department on the strides it has taken to address major challenges identified in both provinces. I'm sure that the lessons that we have learned from these provinces will enable you to identify or pick up the signs of such problems in other provinces in the future. I would like to have on page 14, it refers to the economic activities in Northeast schools. If the department can give us examples of those schools and the economic activities that are happening, that are put in place in these schools. Can you have the names of the schools, please? And also another question, Chairperson, can the department please briefly take us through the interventions or plans put in place to address the grade 9 challenges that has been presented to us? On the scholar transport, does this number that is reflected here of all the students that are in need of scholar transport? And what I would like to know is, what am I trying to say here? What I want to know is that the number that you have given us here, does it cover all the learners that are in need of scholar transport, or are there any other learners that are still not getting the scholar transport? And the last question, Chairperson, is that what does this measure mean of schools in terms of infrastructure? Yeah, we have touched on the issue of learners in terms of resources and the teachers. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First, I would also like to say, and just saying with dismay, that we did not get the presentation up front because I would have really liked to go into this and prepare much better so that we could give more informative questions. I would just like to know, number one, we were talking about the collaboration of schools, but how many schools were actually closed? I would like to know from both provinces how many schools were actually closed, because obviously even if it's a small school and it's closed, there are implications on teachers and as well as the parents, as we've read in the news and these things. So I would like to know how many schools were closed. And then on the temporary teachers, how many of these temporary teachers are we absorbing? I don't know if we can put a percentage on this, because we need to know on temporary teachers what the percentage of these temporary teachers are, and are we actually absorbing them? You know, when we were in Limpopo end of last year with our oversight, what the department said to us on what's happening and the few schools that we actually visited, and the day after when the unions and some of the groups spoke to us, was two different stories. I mean, you know, what the unions said to us was totally that infrastructure must be looked after, school classrooms are falling apart, and then the children just shift to the next class and they'll double the amount of children. And it was almost just like as if the department took us to two or three beautiful schools to look at, but the rest that the people came, but the reality is the schools then were given to us and were said, listen here, there's big problems here. Then on the 80-20 compensation, teachers, goods and services, I'd like to know, we were hearing that listening and it said what it was 87-13 in the Limpopo province. I'd like to know what the ratio is in the Eastern Cape as well. And then how are you going to better it so that it gets to the 80-20? Have you got a plan in place? Because obviously if we're already talking about a 87-13%, somehow we have to have a plan in place to get it down. And I would like to know, what plan have you got in place? Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. It is very good to hear that in the Eastern Cape, the audit outcome, there's a very huge improvement from the disclaimer to qualified, and they aim for an unqualified audit report. I hope that will be achievable this year, at the end of this year, and next year we can hear about that. Thank you. And then the other one, Honorable Chairperson, the administrator mentioned about one or two issues where the Treasury Department is not satisfied. Can you just give us a little bit more clear information about that? Elaborate a little bit on that so that I can understand in which areas and so on is actually the problem still. And then the delivery of textbooks, there are some problems. Can you just tell us in which areas, which schools and so on, are there still a problem with the delivery of textbooks? So that when we are going to the Eastern Cape to visit these schools, so that maybe we can just add those areas also into our oversight plan. Then in connection with the scholar transport, is on course, but can you just tell us in which area in the Eastern Cape are there still a problem in the delivery of scholar transport? I know, and last time, it was the second time when I went into the Eastern Cape to do some oversight in the rural areas, and learners are staying very far from schools. If they still that in that those areas, still that problem, just brief us on that, please. Then the other thing, Honorable Chairperson, is in connection with the infrastructure. And under this item, I also want to include the information about the school destroyed by the tornado. What is the information about that? And also the delivery of schools. There are a few problems, especially sometimes with the contractor who received the tender, and also the access to those schools and so on. Can you just elaborate a little bit on that? And then in connection with the 29 teachers, temporary teachers, still not receiving their salary, what is actually the problem? Because in connection with the information I got about the temporary teachers, 29 is not so huge, but especially when due to those teachers influencing them, it is actually a very huge problem, because from January till now, not receiving a salary, there's a whole lot of problems coming with that situation. Honorable Chairperson, then in connection with the training of the teachers currently at the schools, are there some programs in place of training those teachers so that we can actually better the results, the end results in those schools in the Eastern Cape? And the mathematics, in 2012, it was 38.1%. Now, in relation to what I heard from the presentation of Limpopo, what is the situation? Because in Limpopo, the DBE is also present there to assist the province. Now, the Eastern Cape also is under the administration of DBE. What is the situation there in the coming to Limpopo, Honorable Chairperson, the compensation of employees reduced in 2012-13 and now it is fully funded. What actually, if we are saying reduced, what number of employees is actually under this reducement of employees? Are we talking about 200, 2,000 or what? And then in relation to the number of employees that time in 2012 and 13 and now in 2013-14, what number are we talking about now? Say it was 30,000 that time and now we're talking about 25,000, just in connection with that. And then in relation to the 8,000 unfunded posts, 8,000 unfunded posts in Limpopo. The unfunded post, was that actually access post, a ghost post, or what? Can you just elaborate on that also to the committee? Chairperson, how many temporary teachers permanently absorbed? My colleague next to me already posed that question. And then in the schools merged, 208 schools merged. Now, how many primary and how many secondary schools? And in which area of Limpopo did the department merge those schools? In which area? The last one.
No, I'm just going to request you that you'll have the second round.
Okay.
Please.
Let's keep them the last.
Please.
Thank you very much. You know that the disadvantage of being in the far end of the room. And that's some of the questions will be already asked. But I've got but few questions, Honorable Chair, which I want to ask both the Bopu and the Eastern Cape. Does the Lurid program helps you to track and trace the dropouts in primary schools and high schools, and then what do you do with that information that you get from there? And the other question, Chair, I'm trying to be very brief. There was a very serious problem in the Eastern Cape in particular about the prolonged leave of teachers. Is that problem sorted out? Is to put in place a system to address that perpetual absenteeism of teachers from school? Because I heard in Limpopo that Jameson Matthew said they had an ad hoc and temporary. You have a situation where you address such problem of teachers being absent from school. And then the other question they've been asked, I would just put emphasis on the implication of the merger of schools, because I've seen in other provinces the people going this litigation against department, against so and so on merger of schools. Do you follow proper processes of merging the schools as legislated? That is my question in addition to the question that they've been asked. And then the last question, Chair. I appreciate the progress made from both Limpopo and Eastern Cape. It's a remarkable progress. But I just want to find out whether there are no new tendencies that have just come out to threaten the gains that you have already made in terms of your intervention. I would stop just there, Chair.
Thank you.
My first question, Honorable Chair, can you tell us about the current challenges in these two provinces? And my second question, Honorable Chairperson, what plans are you putting in place to transport learners who are affected by the NERS? Is there reliable transport organized for them? That is only two questions that I've got for now, Honorable Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you. Dr. McMillan.
Thank
questions are neither ad hoc nor temporary.
All right.
The 2% under expenditure in Eastern Cape. I was just asking myself the question of whether the 2% under expenditure, does it mean that, okay, everything has been done, all the goods and services have been delivered, and then, but now you are still left with 2%, or what? You know, whether the 2%, does it mean that there is 2% of work still to be done, and you have reached the end of the year, or what? So that's the one question. And then the decline in the learner number, which affects both provinces. Looking at the national picture, is the decline reflected on the other side by a rise in number of learners in other provinces, like Gauteng or wherever they are migrating to? That's my other question. And then the issue of scholar transport. I see seemingly there's a trend, or whether a central decision has been made to transfer learner transport to the Department of Transport, or vice versa, from the Department of Transport to Education. But the issue is that the demand is generated within the Department of Education. And then now, if this is managed from another department, I foresee that it may actually create, because from the side of the supply, they focus only on the supply side, whereas the demand is generated elsewhere, that is in the Department of Education. And then you find that it will be very difficult actually sort of to match the supply and the demand side of the this, and this may create problems insofar as scholar transport is concerned. And then the other matter of interest, the private schools, or I don't know, they're called what, independent schools. Because seemingly this is an area that is seen by business as a growth, a growth sector. I see now you've got even new companies, Kuro and so on, which are getting into this area. So now, which means that private education is going to be more and more and more expensive for parents and scholars. So now, an interesting thing is that the top performer in private schools is overall number 27 in top performance. It means that the first 26 are actually from the public schools. And then, but have you done some more research to find out how much they are paid to perform number 27? And on average, whether what are the advantages that are being so sought after? If it's not to be top performers, what are the advantages that are being so sought after in these private schools? Is it security? Is it less disruption? Or what aspects that are being, that people are prepared to pay so much for? I mean, there are schools, I know the Rhodesian schools, where people pay more than 100,000 rand a year. Yeah.
Thank you. Please, can we have one meeting, honorable members? Honorable Zulu,
and welcome.
Yeah, thank you, Chairperson.
And welcome you to this lecture.
Thank you, Chairperson, and the department for the fantastic or good presentation made here in this select committee. plan and strategy we have in both provinces to make sure that that province is not going back to the dark side again, the major plan. Another one, what is your plan for your situation to sustain the progress we made so far in that province? And then this school for merging school, to me, I'm coming from KwaZulu-Natal, the distance between schools is 12 to 15 kilometers. Also, your department as a national, we check that provinces, we take the right decision to merge school. Because Angifundile Ngenje is because of how I was went for 20 kilometers to go to high school. But in the present school transport there, like Ifalaza High School, I said to the one, Ingani Hamba, 15 kilometers, these two buses did not care all of these scholars. Because the number there is 1,300 scholars. And then that two buses is never enough to deal with that matter. Also, the child was Hambi Ndawezin, and then the school, and then still have a problem about that.
Thank you, Honorable Zulu. Before I hand to the department to respond, I just want to check particularly, I'm referring to the report. Let me start with Eastern Cape first. When we went on oversight immediately after the intervention, one of the issues was around the inflation of numbers of learners. I'm more interested, how did you manage that, and what is the impact, you know, where you, like for example, where we reported that, where you find a situation where school was having 20 learners, and it was reported that it's having maybe 100. How did you verify that? How did you deal with that problem? And what are the, you know, the process, like when you take that link to the issue of learner transport, what happens now? Because we're supposed to transport less learners, or also the issue of the school nutrition program, then it means that you'll have to care for a lesser number. I just want to check, how did you manage to handle that, and what is the process? Also around the issue, I see that when you talk about the learner transport, you are saying that you are catering for 56,000. By then, when we went there, the report that we got, that it was, the process was still on of verification of the learners because the numbers were inflated. By then, it was 53,000. So can you give us, did, when we finalize, is this a finalized product of that verification process that brought you to 56,000, or actually what is happening? Also, the issue of school nutrition programs, there were challenges that, you know, the service providers or the schools themselves, they didn't even have spaces where, you know, they can keep and prepare food for learners. Has that been addressed? You know, I'm more interested around that, because those are the issues that led to the intervention in that process. Lastly, under Eastern Cape, under a CD program, the department intended to build 49 schools. Can we be updated at this moment how many schools have been built and handed over to the province? Limpopo, Minister, I just want to check, because not long ago the premier was on the media saying that everything is okay in the province. The departments are doing what they're supposed to be doing, and he feels that the intervention team must move out of the province. What is the situation now? You know, maybe we should just
get clarity. What is currently happening? Are you agreeing with the Premier? Are you ready to leave if you are still in the province? When are you intending to leave the province? Thank you.
I'll quickly take up what I think abroad. Constant questions, and colleagues will help me with the technical ones. Just because there was a question about what if there are any new tendencies that we pick up? And I can assure you that I think with time, both ourselves and the provinces have settled down. We found each other, and we've developed very good working relationships. You will know that we came here complaining about difficulties that we're experiencing when we're in the Eastern Cape. But I can assure you without any doubt now that we found each other. We work very well with the newly appointed head of department. They've staffed their offices properly to the CFO, and we really frequently interact. So that part, in terms of relationships, we've settled. And that's why I think things are now working, we're improving. When Mr. Matthews was saying that moving to Limpopo, we had learned our lessons from the Eastern Cape, he was telling the truth, because what we did in the Eastern Cape, I think I'm of cooperative governance, just spent lots of time negotiating power. When we went to Limpopo, we didn't negotiate power. We went in there, we had a mandate, we got done with the work. And even with Eastern Cape, we began to withdraw our engagements with them and did what they were supposed to have done, and they've settled down, they've accepted, and I think that's why we're making progress. So we can't say that I think they've settled now, we've come to accept that we need each other and we live together, and things are indeed working. We're not exaggerating when we say things are working. It took us long in the Eastern Cape to settle, but we have settled. The other point, Chair, which is, and I really hope, because it also does happen with us, where we conflate the 100 Section 101B and our role in the department. Some of the questions have nothing to do with Section 101B, and I really appreciate that. We're a national department. Colleagues expect us to know everything about the province. So some of the questions, like the manager, I'm sure it's because of the flavor of the moment. It's a flavor of the month. Everybody's asking about measures. Measures are a provincial competency. They're not part of Section 101B, but you can answer about it, but they're not part of Section 101B. When we made this presentation here, the original one, I said, because what the department had done, had said, going into the history of the intervention, and now with hindsight, I think they were right. Because we need to remind ourselves to say, when we went to the Eastern Cape and came to you to ask for permission to go there, what did we say we were going to do there? There were five specific areas. We're not taking over the entire department. So the specific things about how many, it's not, the department still exists. So if you want us to bring you reports of all other work in the department, you can prepare for it. But we had asked for five areas of intervention, HR, school nutrition, scholar transport, and that's what we're reporting on when we talk about Section 101B intervention, not everything else. So that when we respond to you, you should know that we didn't prepare for everything else, the whole departmental report of what is happening in provinces. So it's those five areas that we came to ask for permission for. And we said we will also, as the President said, develop sustainable measures to make sure that there's no reverse. Those are the only things we're reporting on. About the belt, we didn't intervene for school infrastructure as part of the request that we made to you. Mm-hmm. So if they're missing belt, it's not what is in our brief. We're working with the department to assist them to cope with school furniture, but it's their responsibility. We're not taking the entire department. So I thought I should just set that context. Also in terms of measures, who said what, where, it's not part of the intervention, but we can answer where we can remember, but we can prepare reports for you if it's an area that you have developed interest in. But it's not part of the intervention. I thought I should say that correctly. So I see you also, it's not part of the intervention, but we can give you answers as a chance asking how many schools. It's part of what I think we should account to you on. It's not part of the intervention, but can answer to that. In terms of whether we think, and I like the question that you are asking, Chair, if we were to be told to leave the province, will we be ready to leave the province? I think we are. But what we really wanted as a national department was not our work to run provinces. It's to identify where the problems are, work with the province to set up systems, and get them to run the department. And I'm quite confident, Chair, that both in the Eastern Cape and in Limpopo, they can peacefully live without us. The relationship that we need with them now is to put sustainability in what we have intervened in. So the Premier was quite correct. The province has really stabilized. We didn't give you the figures, for instance, in Limpopo. We've been able, with the unions, to cut, with the agreement of all the stakeholders, Zwandi, we're at 2,000 and something, excess teachers. How many teachers we have now?
Excess
55 from 2,000 and something. We really think we've made lots of progress. In the Eastern Cape, as I said, the AG said, and that's the question that Mr. Dizel is asking, to say, are we going to get a clean audit next year? I mean, the AG said, for what we have done this year, it's an unqualified audit, but there are still lots of things that we need cleaning up, which he says it might take a year or two. So I can't promise to say we will be able to be out of the woods by next year. But we're dealing with all old issues. But because they have a CFO, they have a new system, they will be able to deal with it on their own. So we're quite confident that provinces can. So what we're doing with them now is to work on a sustainable way to say what is it that we do together, put in place, which will ensure that things don't reverse, but it will move forward. So things like teacher training are not part of the collaboration, are not part of 1701B, but you can answer to them. As I said, provincial infrastructure is not part of section 1B, but you can answer to missing deaths and other things, what we're doing as a national department, not a 1701B, to support provinces thereof. Square transport will answer to them. Yeah, so I just got to check. Colleagues will deal with the others. I've taken notes, so I'll see also what is. That we've not been able to deal with. But, yeah, and the measures, as I say, yeah. ACB is a 10-key program. If you found a new school without this, it definitely is not the school that you're building nationally. When we build a school nationally, the contract is 10-key. By the time we hand over a school, there must be deaf, there must be a computer center, there must be a fully resourced science center with equipment. So it's a 10 key. So if there are no deaf, then that's what we're assisting our provinces with, by getting Department of Labor and other people to help them with their backlog. They have the budgets. We don't even have the budget for provincial centers. So that's their budget. But we're assisting them. It's not part of national. So I thought you should just separate what is national and what is Section 101B. But if, again, through you, you will allow our sister students to prepare more answers, because as I said, it's a mistake that we didn't prepare. We can then submit written responses on specific things that we have not prepared for this meeting, because they're not part of Section 101B. But as I said, national department, we have a responsibility, I think, to monitor and be able to give you answers. So some we might have to do in writing. Okay, I'm not sure if you want to do.
Thank you, Minister. I'll cover two areas and then the colleagues will take the specific questions. On the CD, we have had practical completion for 36 schools. That's basically, we've cleared, the builders have handed over to us, and those schools are in utilization. The others, due to terminations and liquidations, they are, we put in replacement contractors to finish. But we've handed over 10. We got a campaign that's called, a one school per week handover. We've done 8, which started at the beginning of this term, and we are into the 9th week. We've started, so we've had a handover of over 12 of those schools, starting from when the president opened the first one in October last year. In addition to that, there's another 203 schools that have been given out to contractors, of which 54 have already started construction. That's on the SCD. I think on the, just to make an overall comment about mergers and rationalization of schools, in the Council of Education Ministers took a decision last year that there would be two types of schools, primary and secondary, and with the norms there would be a particular size that would be there, which the discretion the MEC has is to deviate from that. But what we have in reality on the ground is we have a primary, we have a middle school, we have a lower school, In the Eastern Cape, you have schools that have only grades 1, 2, and 3 together. You have a school that's 4, 6, and 7. So the merger is just not only about economics and financial savings. It's also about how we could provide a better curriculum to all learners, irrespective of where they are, which also has to be taken into account. In considering a merger, there's various steps which Mr. Matthews referred to, the guidelines that is there, which if followed, and there is consultation and social facilitation, you should get buy-in from the various stakeholders. And what we're finding now is that it's not sufficient to have a merger and say you've closed the school and you're moving to the new school. We need to actually, which is what was discussed at the HEDCOM, is that everything needs to be put in place. The infrastructure, the teachers, textbooks, even scholar transport. We should not be taking a decision that we've merged and tomorrow or in a week from now you will report to a new school. We need to ensure that we have the scholar transport if 20 children have to now be transported there, not at that time, start looking for that. So I think the merger is a that's the manner in which to look at it, and instead of creating additional problems where it's just not about closing.
Thank you.
Just on the merger, because of the difficulties we've experienced with the Western Cape, we have issued a guideline, because our view is that indeed we have to move with measures and closures. So that we're firm about, but we're saying we have to follow the law, and that's why we're giving, at the next CM, we're going to give our provinces what guidelines are so that they are not stopped from doing, because it has to happen. We also send to share, there are schools with 9 children, it just is not viable. So we have to find ways, but we have to follow the law. But there we're very firm that we're going to proceed with measures and closures.
Perhaps just to take the advice from what the minister is saying, that we will bring reports on specific areas where you need more elaboration. But in respect of the 6 areas that we're reporting on, I will just touch briefly on some of the questions that you raised. Let's start with scholar transport. The demand in the provinces is your northeast component area, which is your Sekeseke, you know, going upwards, and that's where the biggest demand is. And the biggest problem of the Eastern Cape is the disparities and distances between those areas, unlike the western part of the Eastern Cape, you know, like Heaven, Port Elizabeth, East London, where the distances are not much. If we look at the baseline, you know, information for Eastern Cape, beginning of last year, the total request for learner transport was around 102,000 requests that were made for learners to be transported. And at that time, the province had a budget, you know, for this 26,000 that ultimately was catered for last year, and which is also being catered for this year. The issue of the management of the service between Department of Transport and Education arose from two issues. The first one, the Eastern Cape Department of the Eastern Cape Provincial Government is moving towards a consolidated public transport system and strategy. And they then made a request that if scholar transport could be part of that design. As a result of that, there were specific issues that were requested from the Department of Transport Eastern Cape. Number one is the design of the service. What should it look like? And what are the standards that must, you know, underpin the design of that service? Number two, the routing and the design of routes, you know, given the nature of schools and given the nature of the demand, how best can then the province manage the routing? Number three was the management of the procurement of the service, you know, what sort of service providers need to procure, to be procured for students. Then the Department of Education manages information of the demand, you know, how many kids need to be transported where. So far, it's working very well in terms of the relationship between the two, because both departments report to cabinet, which means they report to the premier about the nature of service, you know, and how it's progressing in the province. So just to say that I should think to meet the demand is never adequate because of funding problems. And currently, I should think you would appreciate that Eastern Cape is the poor of the poorest, you know, of the 9 provinces, so there's always a need for these kinds of requests. But what they're working within is a national framework, which is a guideline that you provide scholar transport where there is no school in the immediate environment of the children, within the radius of 5 kilometers. You know, that's sort of the kind of frame that exists. But where the demand, you also look at the furthest letter that travels the province, and you start from there in prioritizing, you know, the service. So that's the broad sort of answer to all the scholar transport. So 56,000 is the number that we're working with, but the demand is huge. So beginning of the academic year, we recorded that 102,000, you know, that was demanded, or of requests that were made to the department. Delivery of textbooks. What we did when it came to the Eastern Cape, we found that there were multiplicity of systems to procure books, you know, change of models. They were talking and changing. And coming down, I should say, we had more than 5 meetings where the minister and the deputy minister was coming down together with the other ministers that are part of the fighter side that were assigned to the Eastern Cape. And we start to look at what are the key critical things that needs to be done in order for the LGSM or the textbook problem in this decade to be resolved. The first thing that we did was to agree on the institutional arrangements, and we decided to prioritize it as a high-risk area. We now have a committee that is made up of provincial treasurers, and we've asked AG to sit on observer status, also made up of us as CBE intervention people together with officials of the department. Where we sit with all the service providers involved, that is the publishers in the main, to discuss progress on delivery that is being made. So the model Eastern Cape is using is that they procure directly from publishers and then publishers deliver to schools. But what we've asked them is that we have an interest in terms of progress that is made in your warehouses. So we take reports on what is in the warehouses and all. So we are maintaining that system even this year, so that it doesn't, you know, lose, you know, our sort of focus. So we're focusing on that. The second thing is the institutional arrangements inside the department. So what they used to do in the past, they would have somebody called LTSM project manager. And it depends, because the rate of HODs in the Eastern Cape, the turnover was high. It depends on which HOD is in place, and then they appoint their own person. So there's been a lot of chopping and changing. And with our coming in, we've sort of structured a typical organogram for management of LTSM and the competency areas that needs to be managed by those people. And this is what they are busy implementing now. They are setting up a unit within the department that is going to look after LTSM. The rudimentary is in place with somebody who is the project manager for LTSM, but it's located within the curriculum chief directorate where this LTSM unit is going to be located specifically. And I should think one of the most useful aspects of this is to have an independent audit of your process. And last year we had PwC, which the minister gave us the instructions that you need to have an audit firm. So we did then go to Treasury to ask for support, and PwC, which was already contracted by Treasury, you know, was also roped in by the department to look at. So PwC gave us what we call independent audit of the process, starting from procurement to deliver. If, for example, publishers come and say 20% of the stock is in the warehouse, PwC comes in and follow and give us the exact figures. I should think the LTSM unit at DBE, with hindsight and also with the experience that we've gained over the last 2 years, we've almost got according to a sort of a predictable system of delivery, banning, and packaging. So we have a scientific process that we've almost put our hands on. So Eastern Cape is also reporting at that level. So if we set up a report, we're able to report on receivers, we're able to report on packaging, and we're also able to report on dispatches that have gone to school with exact figures. So it's an area that needs to be managed very well, and this is where we're asking the Eastern Cape Department of Education to develop institutional capacity to manage those processes. And some of those processes can be quite technical, you know, it's not just ordinary processes. You need somebody who has a certain kind of thinking, you know, to manage some of those. We also have a a reporting line, so we've asked publishers to create a call center, which is part of the agreement between the department and publishers, to have a call center for reporting of cases. If schools were intended to receive and they haven't, there's a toll-free number that they phone. Also, as a department, we have an access code to their data. They've given us a PIN code as well as a password. So if we want to punch in and to see the report, we can just punch it straight and get to reports. On learner improvement, as you think DBA can also talk at length, there is a broad national strategy on learner attainment that all provinces are following. There are also guidelines in terms of what gets implemented at what level, what material is in schools, and what material is being used, especially the question that relates to grade 9. So the Eastern Cape is also focusing on that learner attainment strategy and framework, and there's a training program. And for the third and the fourth quarter, I can send a full report of what the plan was and what were the key implementation stages that were embarked upon by the Eastern Cape Department of Education.
Then coming to just broadly on the
challenges, you know, and issues of sustainability, as the minister has alluded, we are definite that they can move on. The rest of the problem that there are issues that the department must deal with. You know, I'll give you an example. The issue of service standards, which is the issue that was commented on by the board, is one area that is dedicated to business standardizing. When you get to a primary school in the Eastern Cape, will you find the same level of provisioning? Will you find the same program, you know, that supports curriculum implementation? Will you find the same arrangement? So it's a big issue that the province is dealing with now. And it's part of what they call an improvement in their service delivery standards. And they've designed a model, which is what we're assisting them to look at a service delivery model. The second issue that the province is here to manage is the issue of demand and supply of teachers. You know, with high turnovers and vacancy rates, I should think when you came in, it's an area that was almost huge, you know, in terms of vacancies and management of vacancies. Then DBE has put in place a support program for management of vacancies, which has really worked very well, and it's almost an area that we're working on together with Treasury to improve that. Thirdly, records management. If you look at the AGES report, which is exactly where the big issues were, complete documentation. AG is making a very interesting comment. He says, previously, we could not even start auditing of books because there was nothing to move from. Now, it's better we can audit, but one or two documents may still be missing, but we can move from them. So the province has embarked on a huge document management project, which looks at both goods and services as well as conversation of employees' documentation. You know, however, it's still an outstanding issue in terms of age issues, but it's a matter that is receiving attention. And then the issue of leave, whether through ill health or prolonged leave. We have a project that is focusing on that, especially on ill health. We have a technical input that is assisting us to deal with all of these cases. What they're busy now doing, we are mining the data, both physical as well as from the system personnel, to look at all of these cases. Because what you find is that what you get from personnel is sometimes different from what you get on the after physical verification. We've had two huge verification projects, you know, that we've carried out. You know, learning from the Bobo, we've asked that state to come on board with the capture. But also, the DSA had assisted us with an HR audit project, you know, that sample, just to give us a sense, and we found some of those discrepancies that they wanted a full audit, which is what that essay is busy dealing with. Then the last one was the issue of leave gratuities, which is also an area now that is under control, which has been a huge issue in the past. Just to say that probably it might be useful to rather follow the route of bringing a full detail on the rest of the issues that we are raising, instead of giving you bits and pieces and pieces. To close on, I wanted to say that in the Eastern Cape, I should think there are three things that work very well, which were very useful. The Eastern Cape DBE was working with National Treasury, DBE was working with Provincial Treasury, and all of them, they were focusing on specific areas where at least there was bleeding to be closed. Not that we say we'll turn the corner, but we'll stop bleeding. You know, if you look at HR administration, which is the biggest problem in the Eastern Cape, that's where the focus is on. If you look at financial management and expenditure, that's where the focus is on. So you have a whole range of technical input that were provided by these national, you know, departments into the Eastern Cape. The second one, I should think, Treasury in the Eastern Cape, you know, I should think they've got the wake-up call and they've set up a mechanism to support, especially on data integrity. And this is where the department has been bleeding in the past. Data integrity, you will go to any to look for data. Sometimes it's inflated, sometimes it's different from what you get when you go to schools. And this is where Treasury has availed resources to the Eastern Cape to start a data trainer project. Hence, that has been. And then, lastly, I should think the Office of the Premier has made a commitment to come together with the DBE in support of the turnaround of the Eastern Cape. I know the NEC and the HOD, you know, are on the radar screen of the Premier, wherein they come in to report on specific issues, particularly these strategic areas, you know, like data cleanup, data integrity, you know, the service standards and all of those. So the focus effort on the Eastern Cape to turn things around. I just want to broadly on those.
Thank you.
Thanks again. Honorable members, I think most of the issues that were raised that were general in nature have been addressed. I don't think I'm going to be happy with it, unless there was a need to emphasize on some of them. There was an important question that was raised, Chair, that relates to the relationship between organized labor and the department for us to be able to deliver quality education. That question is at the core of service delivery. We've got to remember that organized labor is a constitutional imperative. You can't wink it away. It's unfortunate that we've got to deal with that. We have tried our level best to normalize relationships between organized labor, the communities of trust, and everybody in the province, because you can't succeed without them. We're not only doing this because it's convenient. In the part of educators, they are an imperative, you know, arm of the education delivery in the province. So we don't have a choice but to find ways to normalize relationships. There may be tensions, but it doesn't mean that the door gets closed and locked and the keys thrown away at sea. And rather we do our level best to try to find each other. Also. Minister has created a committee, it's like a task team that deals with relations, basically public relations in the province, so that the focus of the administration could be around the intervention focus areas and things that are related to that. For now, I think it has been working quite well, because some of these tensions are diffused in consultations at those meetings where there's a need to escalate the matter to the minister that gets done. So I think we're confident in that area about that one. There was a specific question, Chair, that was asked on page 14 of the presentation about what are the actual economic activities that relate to the school nutrition program. One, you'll recall, honorable members, that school nutrition is procured. Education doesn't prepare it. We don't do that service. We just facilitate it, monitor it, and coordinate it. We procure that service from service providers. That's number one. That's economic activity. Number two, the preparation of the food, or the what is called food handling, is done in the majority of cases. It's the mamas. We call them mamas. I didn't know that concept existed in English. It has become part of the nomenclature in English. When we even speak in serious forums, we say the mamas who prepare the food. We have the mamas that prepare the food. So, and they receive a stipend for that work, for them to do. We also have monitors in the province. We literally decentralize them in the number of districts. So seconds that we have. The minimum is 134, but there are more, depending on the number of schools that the second would have. What we are trying to do with that one is that the monitors must be the closest to the school, so that the issue of traveling is not an issue. We're trying to intensify that program. We are going to be, Minister, working with the EPWP colleagues
at the public works, so that it's a broadened program that will also look into food security imperatives and such things. So that school nutrition is not just about cooking and feeding the children. It becomes a properly coordinated enterprise in that area. The issues that related to scholar transport, I think, have been handled. Matters relating to the measures, except for the one question, how many primaries, how many secondary schools? Honorable member, I don't have that information out of hand. But the majority of the schools are primary schools. Majority of them are in the most rural areas of the province. And that's the situation. We'll provide, as the colleague has already committed, that specialized information that is required there. There was a specific question on infrastructure. This question is also related to what the Honorable Chair was raising on the exit strategy in the province. We've highlighted this problem, this area is a serious challenge. One Honorable Members will note that there's a serious contestation about the available skills. Treasury has recommended that we put together a capacitation team within the province, I mean within the department, that will, among others, do a focus in our case on planning, coordination and monitoring. Public Works is doing the actual delivery of the programs themselves. The issue is that because of the competition for those skills between ourselves and the private sector, in the majority of cases we are failing to attract them. We advertise about three times for engineers, quantity surveyors, and the salary package, unfortunately, that we provide appears not to make them not to make these positions attractive. And it's a matter that National Treasury is assisting so that there's a consolidated type of a solution that is provided for it. That's the one part on the technical side of it. The reality side of it, in our case in the province, maintenance of schools in particular seems to be a serious problem. It's a matter that has been neglected. The understanding that the transfers to schools in terms of norms includes maintenance. It turns out that because we have neglected maintenance, the scope of the problem has escalated to levels that schools cannot manage to even begin to deal with it. To an extent that as part of the intervention strategy, Minister, Mr. Dom is insisting that we must have a maintenance strategy and we'll deal with the schools. Of course, there are other focus areas where we need to deal with the rights-related matters. Water and sanitation is not negotiable. Inappropriate structures, those are not negotiable. The unfortunate thing in provinces like in Mpopo, we're getting into the seasons of the inclement weather terrain. You find a school today devastated or demolished the next day because of the weather conditions or challenges that we find. And it's a matter that you never would have budgeted for. It's a matter that you've never planned. It just comes. And unfortunately, the accessing of the emergency fund is quite a hefty problem. And if you have not anticipated this type of a thing, and therefore you would have not planned for it in the MTEF, it becomes a problem to access funds to fix that school that was there the previous day and was not found the following day. Not that it was stolen, just got decimated by the weather. So there are those challenges that we're working on in a structured way with the cooperation of the Department of Basic Education. There was a question that related to the savings on the COE, how many people were involved. As the Honourable Members will recall, when we made the presentation, we took a deliberate strategy to deal with systems rather than do the human count type of an approach, like the 2% that the provincial EXCO had decided on. In our case, part of the cleanup of the PESAL was a systemic solution to deal with the COE problem. The absorption of the temporary teachers and the control on the ad hoc teachers was a systemic solution to deal with COE. As I've indicated the numbers in terms of runs and cents that were involved, it was 1.3 billion runs that was involved to deal with excess educators, whether you call them temporary or whether you call them ad hoc educators. So we needed to zoom into that. The ability for us to having managed to get about 30% of that total amount of money was victory because it was the first time we're dealing decisively with the project. What we also managed to do in the department, particularly for the public service posts, the not so critical posts were frozen.
took a conscious decision not to advert or appoint on them. We just froze them, and then of course escalated the work that people had to do to other areas. It's a matter we're seriously considering with the reconfiguration or realignment of the organizational structure, that it might be possible that the number of people that are there may not be commensurate to the need and level of service delivery that ought to be done. So the meaner the organization, maybe the more efficient that service would be. So those are the structures that were delivered. It's not a matter that we had to fire people. We did not fire people at all. Another question related to the 8,000 unfunded posts, were they ghosts or were they teachers in excess? You see, part of the personal management is a strange type of a phenomenon, and the acting DG has to help us on this one. What we find, and it's a matter that I'm sure my colleague in the Eastern Cape will confirm, as you see, you cannot anticipate the level at which you need excess educators, like temporary teachers, in our case, and the ad hoc educators. What colleagues do, Honorable Chair, is to create these fictitious posts in the PESAR so that when you appoint them against those posts. Otherwise, we have to revise the PESAR in the middle of a financial aid becomes a problem. So the generosity of them by going to the 8,000 creates an impression that, no, this thing is widespread. And the number 8,000, in our view, was very extravagant. It was way overbought. And we needed to deal with the situation as it is and control it as it is. The view that we're having is that if there are subjects that are taught in schools and we have no teachers to teach those subjects, it's easy to appoint a teacher. Whether you appoint that teacher permanently, or you appoint that teacher temporarily, or you appoint that teacher on an ad hoc basis, the subject still has to be taught. And that's the basis. And the issue that we then were saying, that does not diminish the need, and therefore you have to shrink the person because that post is funded. In the case where, for instance, that educator does not exist, and it's a matter that has been factored into. The issue of planning for the unknown to the extent of the generosity of 8,000 was completely out of order. So we just needed to deal with that matter and literally cut it out. So that as part of the investigation now, we want to know whether we've paid on those 8,000. We know in Waterberg we've paid three teachers, hence the matter has taken the litigation route. But for the rest of them, the 7,997, we need to know whether we have or have not paid on them. That's the current study that is happening. The Minister has spoken about the legal consultations on merging of schools. We can't do without that. But the 3 months consultation process is not negotiable. In the majority of cases in the province, these measures are requested by the communities in which the schools exist. And in some cases, some of the chiefs, Honorable Chair, have literally forced the department to actually do the merging without the consultation because they say they initiated the mess and it's going to be dealt with. There's nobody else to speak with in those localities other than them. But the issue, fortunately, is that the issue there is that because we then had said you can't discriminate or literally prioritize the schools because of that pressing need, or somebody's going to turn around and say you did not follow due processes. That one is not negotiable. You've got to follow that process. I think there's a last one, Chair, that related to the performance of independent schools. That's a telling point the Honourable Member is making. That's why we're saying we are hoping that it's not just a flash or a flood, that we found a situation where 26 public schools did better than independent schools. They would need to do serious type of research. Mr. Mueli in the curriculum branch knows about this. So that whatever we did in the province with the 26 schools could be expanded as broadly as we can. What we cannot say out of hand is to what is the commensurate cost that goes with it. It's a matter that we've got to look at. I think it's a triggered some interest that we even look into the cost imperatives on that one. But on the scale, you'd know that independent schooling is much expensive compared to private schooling, maybe to the extent that the Honourable Member has already stated. The last point the Minister has responded to on the exit plan, what we can say for the Honourable Members is that we had a workshop with the HOD, the CFOs, and all. 2 weeks ago, preparing on what Minister was speaking about on the sustainability and embedding change management within the province, particularly in the five departments. There are interesting inputs that were made at that meeting. We're compiling the document. We still have to report to IMC about that one. But the focus, as we are saying, is to sustain the gains that we've made and embed change management. We trust that at some point in time that document will be made available to the Honourable Members.
Thank you, Honourable Members. There's
a question that didn't answer that Kila wants to speak to, because there was a question around attendance and other things in what Zambia is thinking. Anything can contribute. No, no, the Peter one, your attendance, whether the council is on the hook list to cover. There's a question for the council.
Of those teachers that are long on leave, the one that are taking long on leave.
Or, as what we have done, we've almost gone into baseline assessment of how many of these cases were in Eastern Cape. As I was saying, we have a technical input that we have obtained to look at the data. So they have gone into the system to establish how many of each of these cases, and we've asked them to sort of date them. The next meeting is on Tuesday next week, where that's how I was saying I can give you the full data next week, because they're going to give us a draft report of how many of these cases. We have categorized them into almost three distinct categories. There are those cases that people are already at 60, you know, and it should be easy for those to decide on. And then there's a range between 55 and 60, and then there's a range below. So we've asked the HR unit in the department to sort of give us the exact figures in terms of how many and the total cost of dealing with all of them. So that relates to people who have been boarded, people have been absent for periods of time. We will try to understand the nature of this case with each one. We are dealing with it as well.
Thank you very much. In addition, because this is a fundamental matter that we are working as government through the TPSA, we are happy to report that there is a relationship with regard that the health risk managers have been appointed by the TPSA. And now, through the offices of the premiers and provinces, they will be conducting interviews to select their preferred health risk managers. What we have done is that we've communicated to provinces for them to look into those cases, so that immediately when the risk manager have been appointed, they're able to deal with those cases immediately. There's a schedule of the dates that have been communicated to all provinces. Eastern Cape, I think, should be starting on the 18th already. They're starting scouting the processes. So we are hopeful that by the 31st of October, we shall say that all health risk managers have been appointed in all provinces to deal with the backlog and the cases that are emerging.
Thank you. Honourable Member, are there any other questions or follow-up? Is it before that, Honourable Member? Two questions. Yes. And just a moment, Honourable Makunyani, is it a follow-up or a new question? Two new questions. Let me allow Honourable Tibidia first. Just make,
two questions under the Eastern Cape is in connection with the two issues that I hear from Treasury. That problem. And then the other one in connection with the 2019 issue. Those two questions. And then the one under the Topo. My understanding, just for my understanding, you're referring to the 8,000 unfunded posts. Now I understand that situation. What I want to know from your side is, you mentioned about the compensation of employee needs, and employees Ethiopia and the other staff members also more. That was the reason why the spending on salary of staff members decreased so much. And then the situation was actually rectified. You got my
Yeah, I think let me take this opportunity for a follow-up from Eastern Cape. When you clarify the issue of the learner transport, you said currently you are catering for 56,000. And at the beginning of the financial year, there were requests of plus minus 100,000. You know why I'm asking this? It's because according to the report that we had immediately after this, the report indicated that there were 110,000 learners, which was an inflated number. So I'm worried because after verification, we got a less number. But according to your input, that the request, it took us back, you know, according to a report, that at the beginning of this financial year, there were a request for 102,000. You know, I just, you know, you should just clear my mind. Let me, you know that, and allow members to ask new questions. Let me start with Honorable, and then this way. I've got three hands, Tade Makunyane, Honorable De Villiers, Honorable Hasmin and Honorable Minister.
Okay, thank you, Honorable Chair. My first question is, where does adult literacy fall? And then we have statistics as to adult literacy and so on, but that's only the participation. And then, questions around that. The other thing is whether on the issue of school feeding scheme and scholar transport and economic activity, whether this alternative ways of providing for this have ever been looked at. For instance, getting school buses for schools, and then school buses which can actually be used as educational aids because they can be used for school education and so on and so on. And then, on the other hand, on the school feeding scheme, the relationship between the school feeding scheme in a particular area with the local economic development strategy of the particular municipality in the area, whether in the sense that looking at issues like food gardens, local procurement, small businesses, and so on and so on around those areas. Because I see in some cases, for instance, in Limpopo, you find people who are providing this food for schools coming even from other provinces or being very, very large businesses. And large businesses know that they don't really care about local economic development. So, whether there is a policy that says how the procurement for school feeding scheme should be run, again, in relation to the local economic development strategy.
Thank you. Honorable Villas.
Honorable Chairperson, my first question is in connection with the best practice of maths program. Now, from the document you presented this morning, from 2011, in 2011, the results, annual results for in mathematics was 30%. Now, to 2012, there was a decrease of 28%. So
chairperson is in connection with the ad hoc educators. As a previous teacher, this one is actually for me. To me, it's very strange, ad hoc, right? Now in Afrikaans, we call plaasvervangende onderwijs. If there's a teacher, say for 2-3 weeks, absent, and you get, go out, find somebody out there, and then you call it a plaasvervanger. I don't know what English word I use. Now my question is actually, do you budget for those not so nice words, ad hoc teachers? Do you budget for them? Right? Every year. And is that situation also in the Eastern Cape? Not only in Limpopo, but also in the Eastern Cape. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
But
no there's
no ad hoc teacher.
It's temporary. Please, honorable members, with a message.
Chairperson, is just an emphasis on the issue of the measures, that we need a full report of the measure of the 308 schools that are in the process of merging. We need that information so that we're able to respond to the communities when they ask us about this measure. We, at least we respond from an informed base.
Thank you, Honorable Mulder.
No, thanks, Chairperson. I would just have to be clarified whether does the procedure of if we are sick 3 months full pay, 6 months half, more than that, get nothing. However, there have been cases before I got here of a difficult process of boarding a teacher in terms of being given a medical boarding. So I'm not sure whether these teachers that are typically absent are checked in that process. Of course, it's so difficult for a department at the end to board a teacher that are medically incapacitated.
Thank you.
So, can I take a to repeat, Chair? We were requested to report on section 101B. So if colleagues have got questions which are not section 101B, we're supposed to be told in time to say we want a general report on education. So that the question of measure is not an important issue. The national decision that we took as CEM, no, I'm just saying you will want for this one, so that, you know, your side goes, you have to answer questions. You're going to have to answer KZN, you're going to have to answer everywhere else. Because the national decision that we took, that we have to comply, what Ted was saying, to comply, no, I'm saying that to comply with the new norms and standards. So the point I'm making, colleague member, is that you want a report on measures, we give a full report. Because, so we're not going only to answer for. I'm really saying for the sake of being able to answer. We're going to have to answer nationally. So we will give you answers, and I'm really requested to submit a full report. We're going to see if we can give you answers for entire major issues. Chair. The main problem, can I finish, Chair?
No, is this point of order?
Point of order.
Honorable civilians, what is your point of order?
Chairperson, my point of order. I understand what the minister is saying. But the question from us as members in connection with the merger of the 305 schools, that question arises exactly out of the report.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that is the reason why we pose that question. So I'm not satisfied about the answer from the minister.
Thank you, Honorable de Villas, because Minister, I was just, that is why I opened this case, that I think this also triggered members to ask questions, because it does reflect on the presentation. Thank you.
Let me drop and explain why I was saying, if you want a full report, because the members said they are going to be asked questions. So I'm saying, I think, and I thought I was doing it for the sake of members, to say, it is the flavor of the day. You're going to be asked more than the POPO. So we offer to give you the entire report of measures. So if it came wrong, then let me accept it. There's a question we didn't answer also from you, Chair, which around infrastructure and cooking facilities. What we've done, and we can give you the report, we have put in place, because indeed we've also picked up that there are very unhygienic conditions.
Minister, just a moment. Honourable members, the Minister is responding. Please, Prince, Your Excellency, please. Honourable Minister.
So we have a program, Chair, because we agree with you that also the cooking facilities that we found food prepared in the open, sometimes in classrooms. So we're working on a plan to get other mobile kitchens to schools ready to at least make that part safe. So I thought colleagues will also comment on the close to this raised there. The other question that we didn't answer, Chair, was around private schools. And I think, again, if you get your permission, well, it's a very interesting area. If we can submit a report, because we've been monitoring the growth of private schools and other things, because what is happening, Chair, they're eating up from each other. They're not eating up from the public sector. So it's private schools buying other private schools because of, I think, the economic difficulties that they're experiencing. But the other growth is also created by settlements that are developed, especially the housing, which has spiked with private schools. They go into gated areas, and then when they lock themselves in, then they have to, they normally provide schools for themselves. And that was what has also pushed and driven the private school sector, that all these gated communities where the state can't even provide a school in a gated area. And that has spiked also private schools, but it makes for very interesting reading, just understanding the sector. On the medicine sciences grade 3, Mr. Divas, only the free state did not drop. Nationally, we dropped in grade 6. So it's not only Limpopo. So it was a national drop, and only the free state dropped. And we did try to understand why the free state had not dropped. And we found that they, at the foundation phase, had a very strong, solid program which they're implementing. Whereas all other provinces were focusing on the senior phase in terms of their medicine science strategy. And that's where the strength of Limpopo Western Cape is in terms of medicine science. So they focus mainly on high school, whereas the Free State has focused on the primary schools and have a very comprehensive, a very robust program. And they're the only province that didn't drop last year. So it's not only a Limpopo issue. Yeah, I thought I should just raise those and answer some of the questions that we have not responded to.
Thank you.
In the report in the Eastern Cape, I think that was the second issue mentioned about that. Treasury was not satisfied about two issues. And it's on the presentation. I can find it for you. That time we did not have this document. Just check quickly. But it was actually in connection with the performance of the Eastern Cape basic education. Now,
and you mentioned that there were actually two issues from Treasury's side not satisfied about the implementation of the section of ARPA to the performance of it. Now, that was not clear to me, and that was the reason why I put this question here. Because I want to find out what is actually the issues. So I can't give you more clarity in that direction. Because it was unclear from your side.
No. Thank you, Chair. Just to say, only 29 cases, it's documentation that is incomplete. And what we normally do, when we make submissions to China, and they come back with that clear, we set it back to the schools where teachers are supposed to make sure that all of their recommendations are complete. There are things like, you know, the ID numbers must be correct, you know, all of the documentation that is needed by Treasury to get
comes in, your HOD comes in. So the decision that we took when we came in is that let's experiment with a model where we send the money to schools, but the implementation protocols are controlled by us provincially. And we give them financial management instructions, we give them budgeting and expenditure patterns, we give them procurement models that they can use. And we monitor as a department. As a result, the department has set up the necessary infrastructure to support monitoring, you know, like appointment of monitors who go to schools and manage and monitor the implementation of the things. So, however, there's an interesting debate and discussion that is taking place in this campaign, which comes from rural development, the Department of Rural Development, which seeks to explore whether a group of emerging farms can be of service to a group of schools, but they are piloting. But as an intervention in the province, we told us that the experience of messing up and working up with a simple program to provide a meal to a child so that the child can perform. Our duty is not about feeding and economic development. We understand the parenting. But our duty is to make sure that those learners are enabled to participate in the curriculum fully, so that, you know, when they are part of the curriculum, when they are part of schooling system, it's learners who have been provided with a full meal. But there is an experiment and a pilot that is taking place in this case that's looking at energy farmers to see how they can provide support to schools by providing meals and therefore growing the economy locally. The issue of food gardens is also part and parcel of the broader, you know, discussion about supplementing what the department is providing for education. But always you need an own infrastructure to develop a fully fledged school garden. It is the same, children must go and plow the garden. Sometimes it sort of gives problems. But what I've seen so far, the amount of gardens available to schools, you can never say this is a garden that can sustain a nutrition program. They are very small scale. But what I wanted to say as an answer is that the Eastern Cape is exploring and right now we have decided that the money stays with schools and that the schools they provide. The immediate problem that has troubled us when we looked at the study is how much time of the school principal and SMT does it consume to manage procurement and all of that. So that's what we're working on now. A research arm of government is taking called ACCEPT. We do have commissions to look at the implementation of the nutrition program and the efficiency and the effectiveness of the current model. So they will come back to us to give us an answer on what is the most appropriate way to go forward. But data depends. The second issue, just on the issue of broadening, I mean of quality, probably DG can give a broad framework in terms of law and policy. But we just wanted to say that, you know, as we budget for our post basket every year, we budget for temps. We budget for substitutes. The big problem is when they get out of hand. That's where the problem is, when they become unmanageable. Otherwise, you can talk about cases of ill health. These are catered for in law, but it's when they get out of hand. So in these two provinces, it's a situation where they've got out of hand that we're trying to manage. Teachers additional to the establishment and movement of teachers is something that's supposed to happen annually, you know. But because in some provinces there are fights between unions and departments to find teachers not moving, then it leads to the escalation of the problem. This is where we are trying to get our hands on it. Just to say that in the same case, with the intervention, I found a very sort of useful collaboration between the teacher unions and the department development. When we came in, there was no chamber meeting, nothing happening, it was dysfunctional. As I speak to you now, the labor nations chamber is functioning, we have appointed secretary to the chamber, meetings are sitting, we can provide minutes of all of those meetings. So it's a functional unit. Last week, SATU, in particular, came
letter transport.
The letter transport. And I do not know which time you were in the province and in terms of figures, because the figures that I'm talking to now, I got from the unit, scholar transport unit, that currently is 102 that was on demand. But 56,000 is what we are providing. That 56,000 is what we've reported to DBE throughout. And in all our documentations, you will see the same 56,000. So the 53,000 I wasn't sure where it came from. So these are the figures that we got from our scholar transport unit, the unit that manages it.
I think maybe to assist, it was over when we... That time of year. I think maybe to assist you is that we had an oversight on from the 16th to the 19th August 2011, and this is the report that we had by then. That we had and indicated that after verification, the actual number of learners who qualified to be transported, it was 53,000. Not 110 at initially, which led to the system to fall. That is why I'm not comfortable. I'm saying now, it's like you're going back to the very same number when we had that meeting. It was reported that it was an inflated number. I think you'll have to check actually what is happening there. I don't expect you to respond to that, but as a task that you need to check, that it shouldn't take us back to the same problem that led for that department to be under section 101B. It has been responded to. Yes. The honorable members and honorable minister, I think this is a problem where members will ask and talk, you know, sometimes they just miss out, but I know sometimes you have to refresh. It's just that sometimes you refresh at the wrong time. Then you just refresh at the wrong time. Let me just take this opportunity, Minister and your delegation, honorable members, to indicate that as this select committee, we welcome the presentation, but we are happy with the progress because we had an opportunity to go to these provinces. We had an opportunity to interact with all the stakeholders. We had scholar up in these provinces that at least there's a movement, and we hope that whatever that we have done, that those programs that we are having to make that we should be sustainable, we expect that this is going to happen. And my wish is that we should not have the same problem in other provinces. I think we should be having systems to pick up, you know, early enough in other provinces, whether they are going to have the very same problem. And also to the department and the two provinces, I must indicate that the research unit, because it was the first time that we are having this type of intervention, the research unit together with this select committee is busy, they are at the process of finalizing their plans to do a study on this, and we request that when they come or interview, just because they want to know what were the challenges, how best can we deal with that, we request for cooperation on this matter. On that note, I thank everybody. Thanks.
You gave me the explanation on plaster funder. And I was actually looking to Mr. Van der Jeffer. He will give me the answer. But you make the answer very clear. Substitute teachers.
No, I think we had that. Yes, agenda. No, it's not agenda. Honorable members. I'm going to request the department to excuse just to leave us, and honorable members, just stay behind for 5 minutes so that we adopt the program for the fourth term.
So can I request something? Because my understanding was that there would have been questions that we had not, we were not able to answer because we have not prepared on them. So perhaps if you could then send us a note, I've written some, so that indeed we were able to share information with yourself. So I'm not sure whether you wouldn't send us a letter to say we still want the following, or we should send what you think. So we need to clear that one, so by the time we give you, we know exactly what you still need from us so that we can prepare. I don't know how you want us to handle it.
Honorable Member, I think it will be best because actually we also needed the full report, because if you say this is just a presentation, and in most cases we don't cover all the areas, but I think the secretary to the committee will write a letter requesting that report so that we have the full report and all those issues that we need to respond on.
No, that's fine, that will give you, but also in terms of other questions which are not in the book, if you want us to give you other, I mean, like the KZN to them,
no,
so you send us a letter to say if we can share the following information to them.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I see now you are.
Thank you.